What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. This is episode 40, which is frankly just crazy to me. I can't believe we made it here, but here we are, episode 40. So I heard about Aaron from this podcast that I love to listen to. Actually, two podcasts. One is called The Popcast, and one is called The Bible Binge. And if you are not subscribed and listening regularly to these two podcasts, you need to stop listening to this and go subscribe while you're thinking about it, because they are awesome. Knox and Jamie, who host both of those podcasts, do an amazing job. And we found out about Erin because she's sort of the COO. She like makes these, you know, podcasts run. She was at the live show that we went to, and we've seen her around. So I reached out to her to come on the Theology of Hustle, and we discovered that we grew up like 15 or 20 minutes away from each other. She's from Canyon. I'm from Amarillo, Texas, small towns in the Texas panhandle. And we actually graduated the same year from high school. So we literally grew up right together, which is so bizarre. It's such a small world. And this interview with Erin is incredible. We talk about where she's, you know, her trajectory to ending up in Alabama and what she's doing for the podcast and the Bible Binge. We talk about creativity in the life of a Christian. We're also both Enneagram 3s, and so we talk a lot about what it is to be a 3, and those conversations are always very enjoyable. But the thing she really... I wanted her to come on and talk about was this Lent devotional that she is coming out with. And I've seen this thing and I think it's awesome. We have a great conversation just about what Lent is, what sort of made her go down this road. And we talk about what the devotional and all that is. And it's a great conversation. I feel like she's the type of person that can have a conversation that's super funny and fun at one point and then is in depth and has real depth to Christianity at the same point. And I think that's what this conversation is. One thing that's really cool too is that she has offered a discount code for listeners of Theology of Hustle, which I'm super excited about. I think that's really cool. I think that's cool that she did it. I am also, though, going to make you listen to that point in the episode to get said discount code. So if you want a discount on Aaron's Lent devotional, you are going to have to listen to that point and make sure and go out and purchase yours. It's a steal at what she has it priced at. And I think it's really important stuff. I think Lent is one of those seasons that we, especially as modern Christians, need to lean into to really experience, you know, the depth of some of the loss of Jesus. I mean, Jesus literally died so that we could be saved. And so, yeah, I think it's really important stuff. So we will get to the interview, I promise. Just one thing, make sure that you, while you're thinking about it, go ahead and leave me a rating and review just so people can know the podcast is out there and that people listen to it. I would greatly appreciate that. Make sure you're following me on all the socials to stay up to date at Theology of Hustle. And I hope you enjoy this interview with me. All right. Well, Erin, hey, thanks so much for jumping on the podcast with me.
I'm so excited to be here. This is so fun.
This is awesome, too. The two panhandle people that didn't previously know each other, right? Texas Panhandle.
I know. It is such a small world. We are from God's country, and we didn't even know it.
That is true. And we graduated the same year and lived like 15 minutes from each other.
Also, that's just bonkers. That's crazy. Right? But yeah. You were from a bougie Tascosa, and I was from... the sticks. So
at least it was in Amarillo High, you know.
Amen. Okay.
Oh man, Amarillo people are gonna hate us for this. That's all right. So anyway, okay. So how about we jump off the podcast with you just introducing yourself to everyone?
Yeah. So my name is Erin Moon. I grew up in the Panhandle, home of the finest donut in the land.
Yes.
At the Donut Stop. And yes. I came from a great family of really hard workers. My dad has built his business up for almost 40 years. My mom went back to school when we were in high school and she had a full-time job. They always really modeled a serious work ethic, but they were just, I just grew up in a great family. Like, I wish my family were worse so that I could, like, you know, have more traumatic experiences to really flesh out in a riderly way, but they weren't. So I can't really do anything about that. It's fine.
That
it's fine.
It tough.
It's hard to be mad at your parents for being good parents. Look, I figured it out. Yeah. I remember like asking my dad if he liked his job. He's an insurance agent. He owns his own insurance agency. He's worked in the same office on the square since I was itty bitty. And he said he did. He liked it because he liked being out in the community, but he liked what it enabled him to do and what it afforded him the opportunity to do. Like, he came to all my brother's karate lessons. He came to all of my tennis practices. You know, he was at all of our events. And that's always really stuck with me as the measure of success, you know, like a job you like and enjoy, but enables you the freedom to do the things you really want to do. Yeah. So that's kind of always stuck with me. And then I actually went to college for 2 years at WT in Canyon.
Oh, nice. I went to AC. So,
AC, the place to be. Yeah. Yes. So good. I went to WT and I was a theater major, much to my parents' chagrin. And I really wanted to be a theater teacher. I had actually my best friend's father was our high school theater teacher. And I adored him and I loved doing theater. And I was like, I'm probably not going to be on Broadway, probably. But I think I really want to be theater adjacent. And so my parents were like, well, okay. And I did that. And I moved to Birmingham, Alabama in like a couple of years into college and to do work as a touring actor with this youth parachurch organization. And I was like, I'll be here for like a semester. And 17 years later, I'm still here.
Famous last words.
Yeah, right I know, there. Right? And it has taken a while for Alabama to grow on me, but I really do love it here. It is a really special place and we have a really great community here. And anyway, and then, you know, I fell in love with a boy and tried to convince him to marry me. And then I did. Catfished him in real life. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm living in Alabama now. That's weird. But I started working in the office of this parachurch organization. And while I was going to school in Birmingham and I was still in the theater department and I was learning about script writing and I was learning about screenwriting and I worked in the creative department and with a group of older guys who just really took me in, I think, and pushed me to be better. They taught me they taught me how to edit video. They taught me what makes a good shot. They taught me about audio. You know, all of these things that I end up using now in my real job, they were so good and they were so kind to me to help me be better. I think they saw me as like a little sister and they taught me everything they knew and I'm forever indebted to them. And, you know, that department was so great and it was so crucial for me. They taught me, I mean, and even further than that, like leadership and how to be a boss, how not to be a boss, the tension of being a creative in a business, you know, and I started helping with creative aspects of that company's Bible studies, which turned into me writing some of the Bible studies, which is hilarious because I'm still a theater major. I have no biblical studies background whatsoever. And then I worked there for a really long time and we had actually a stint in Nashville, which was just a really, really dark time for our family and came back.
Because of Nashville?
Because of our job situations. And I moved up there to work with a different large church organization. And it just was not a great fit. And my husband never found a job. And we had a baby there. It was just like our random child.
It was one of those seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like a really random child born in Tennessee. And it just did not work for us. And it was a little bit of a personal thing. Like we were like, well, we just really feel like God is saying you get to choose. If you want to stay in Birmingham, you can. If you want to stay in Nashville, you can. And then we were like, oh, guess what? I don't think that's what he was saying at all. I think we misinterpreted that. So we turned around and we came back to Birmingham, which was a great decision for us. And we're just supposed to be here. We spent a lot of the beginning of our marriage, me trying to get us back to Texas, where I thought, you know, this is why am I living in Alabama? I don't want to be an Alabamian. And it was just like God constantly closing those doors to say, no, stop, please cease this attempt. And so finally, once we've got that through our heads, I think now I just love it here. I really do. And so anyway, I eventually moved to a different company with more of a startup feel, kind of the same things. I was the creative director of events there. I helped launch those youth events. I loved it, but then I had another baby and I don't know. Kids, man.
Those babies. They rock your world.
They're tough. And so it was, we moving from 2 to 3 and they hand you your third kid and you just start getting your butt kicked like every day.
Right.
It's just nuts. It really is.
It is crazy how much more insane 3 is. I don't even get it.
Liar told me that the transition from 1 to 2 is way harder.
Right.
And I was like, you are not my friend anymore, because that is a lie from the devil. That's not true. So,
well, can we just agree that people should not give advice?
Just say, stop talking, man, it is hard. You're right. Yes. So I said, I can't travel like this anymore. I don't feel good in my heart about leaving my husband with 3 kids all the time. And so, they actually created a position for me, to do more editorial Bible study stuff, which was really great and super fun. And, I sat under my boss at this place, is just one of the most stand up people I know. He's a great, great guy. And he really taught me, hey, this is how you write a Bible study. This is how you think critically about some of these things, and just really so helpful and just invested in me. Again, I'm the product of so many people investing in me. And so I started doing that. And then I had some friends who started a podcast. And the podcast with Knox and Jamie, and they were going to do a live event. And that is my background. I have a lot of live event experience, production experience. And so I said, hey, you guys don't know what you're doing. Can I help you? And they said, yeah, we'll pay you $500 and a bottle of nice tequila. And I was like, done. All right.
That's a good deal.
I can be on that. and so it was really fun. Then they started a second podcast called The Bible Binge, and which is recapping the Bible like you would your favorite TV show. And so through that, they decided to have a section called The Gentle Rebuke, which they needed a resident Bible scholar for. And I just happened to be, I don't know if you'd call me a scholar, but I am a Bible studies editor and writer. And so I became that. And then they just started gradually asking me to do a little more work for them, video work, writing, consultation stuff, until they finally offered me a full-time job. And that brings us to where we are today.
Where we are today.
Yes. Yeah. It's very exciting. That is.
Yeah. I find so much of myself in your story. Not only just coming from the same place, basically literally, but the same age. And then we both have sort of gone off and had 3 kids and, you know, started making a life elsewhere. So it's kind of weird. It's cool though, because I definitely understand. And one thing I've not gotten to talk about on the podcast as much as I would like to is the 20s, how much growth happens in the 20s. You can't see until you look back.
And, yes.
Right.
Cause you're just floundering and you think, I'm never gonna, cause while I was doing all of those things, I was also working at Starbucks. I was also being a nanny. I was also being someone's office assistant. I actually worked as a nanny from 9 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. And then I would go to Starbucks at 4 and I would close.
Oh my
gosh. I just worked all the time. And I thought, is this what being an adult is like? This is terrible. Oh my gosh, I hate this. So really it's the and for me, it's the people who were a little bit older than me, who were a great deal more talented than I am, and that just took the time to turn around and say, hey, can I, like, I see something I can work with in you, like a little, just a tiny bit. And so, and you're all we've got. So, let me help you. Let me make you better. So yes, those years are so key, and you just don't realize it until you're in it.
Yeah. Well, cause there's the same part of you as a 20-year-old, I think, or in your 20s that thinks I know stuff. People should give me the opportunity to do stuff, right? But you don't know that you don't know what you're doing. You know, like there's like a dichotomy, or like both at the same time are kind of working together, I guess.
Yes, that's so true. And you I mean, it's like my kids think I'm so stupid. It's incredible.
Right. Wait,
and
how old?
Okay. So I have a 9-year-old, I have a 6-year-old and a 15-month-old.
Oh my gosh. So mine are 9, 7, and 2.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
That is bizarre.
We're twinsies.
I guess so.
We're just living parallel lives. Right. But my oldest and my middle, they think we are the dumbest people. Then they, and that's exactly how you are when you're 20. You're like, I appreciate you, veteran of this career choice, but I am very young and fresh. And I have a lot to say, and it's like, no, shut up and listen. Yeah, right. And I think that's hard sometimes, because you come, if you're coming out of college, if you're coming out of whatever kind of job experience you have, you do know. I mean, you do know a lot, but you don't have any practical, you don't have any practical knowledge. You're just a kid.
Yeah. And it you can't take a shortcut to learning that knowledge, right?
No. And it's so valuable. Like if we would twist it on its head to say, okay, what can I learn instead of what can I teach?
Right.
That would be such a better way to look at your early job experience than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if anything, Starbucks destroyed me into understanding that.
Oh my gosh. I was like, well, and it's made me such a better, an actual better human, because I go, oh my gosh, like people treat you like garbage.
Yeah.
And yeah. So I go out of my way to be extra kind to anyone working in any kind of service.
Right.
Because I'm just like, I know that some guy came through the drive-thru today and like sexually harassed you and then wanted his drink for free. And some lady yelled at you because the coffee was hot, and you're just like, that's not your fault.
Right.
You're doing a great job.
Right. Yeah. So I got one story for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
So it's Thanksgiving Day, right? And there is no worse day at Starbucks than any holiday.
Absolutely not. No question. Well,
people come in. Well,
Black Friday.
Yes, right. So it's Thanksgiving Day. I'm not with my family because I'm working at Starbucks for these people. I've been at Starbucks for 10 years.
Getting that overtime, though.
Right. Yeah. Yes, that really adds to the pocketbook. Yeah, really, really. Yes.
So really I've been worth it.
Right, exactly. I've been a barista for 10 years, and I'm making this guy's drink, right? And I hand him his drink. He swears to me I didn't put the third shot in it. Like, somehow he knows, like, all the stuff that I'm doing in the background. And so he goes back through, orders another shot, a single shot, to put into his coffee. And then on his way out, literally screams at me, like, yells at me, like, this guy didn't put my third shot in my latte, and I'm super pissed about it. And just like, and I go, happy Thanksgiving, sir. And like, just walk him out the door. I was like,
amazing.
Who yells at somebody on Thanksgiving
people
about a shot
sad.
Of espresso? Man, what is this world? You know, it needs Jesus, right? That's like,
it does need Jesus. Right.
Okay, sorry. I could tell Starbucks stories.
Oh my
forever,
gosh, but I love finding people who work at Starbucks, because it's like we're in the trenches together. Like, we know.
You get it. You get it.
Totally know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Okay. So, I think all that 20 stuff. I really appreciate you chatting about that. I want to hear though about Christian theater or Christian production, whatever the parachurch. I need more information.
Oh, well, it's such an interesting world. Now, I will say, and see, I even left so many things out. I was actually in, so I worked for this company, and they would do youth camps in the summer. And so part of their production programming were actors that would do, you know, like morning improv shows or spoken words or like dramas at night. It was sort of like One Tree Hill for Jesus kind of things. And so we would do this, and we would travel. And so you're traveling with like rec leaders and mission leaders and, you know, your camp director or whatever. And so actually met my husband the first year I did this, and we were on the same team.
Okay.
We traveled together, and I thought he was like simultaneously super cute and also the worst, because like literally one of the first things he asked me was, "Hey, my name is Ben. Do you want to see my hotornot.com rating?" And I was like, "Oh, guess who I'm not going to be friends with? This guy." And then he followed it up with, "It's a 9.6. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, how did this person doesn't even love Jesus? This is not okay." So it's just a lot to unpack, truly. What the beginning of every great love story with hotornot.com.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife, we knew each other in high school. We went to the same high school. She literally could not stand me in high school. She hated me. So,
well, I think
that, like in a Jesus-y way.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, right. You might have been hateable in a Jesus-y way.
I was very hateable in all ways. So,
yes. So we did that. And then I started doing more of the behind the scenes stuff as opposed to the acting, and
sure,
which I really loved. And I actually was in a screenwriting class at my college. And we wrote actually forgot about this until just now. We wrote a radio show for a local radio station, and it was like a radio drama, and it was called Body Love. And it was to make people in the community aware of like medical things. So it was like this radio soap opera. And it was like, well, this person has diabetes, so we need to talk about that. And like, so that if people out there have diabetes, they'll go get checked for it. It's just like, what is happening? Oh my gosh. And so I did that. And then, so that led to more screenwriting and more script writing. And then I had two friends that I'm still good friends with. They started their own like theater troupe, like an acting troupe that would go to Disciple Nows and, you know, winter retreats for youth. And we had a full show, and we would drive to, you know, some church in Georgia in one of the guys' BMWs. And he, you know, he was on the Atkins diet, so he had like a cooler of turkey sausage in the back. And, you know, it was just a mess, just like 20-year-old dummies. But it was so much fun. It was like touring with, you know, for God. It was so fun. And we had so, you know, we slept in terrible places. We, you know, did all the Baptist encampments. It was a lot of fun. So we did that. And yeah, so that's kind of where, you know, we really looked up to people like the Skit Guys, and, you know, John Crist did not exist at this point.
For sure.
Yeah. Tripp and Tyler did not exist at this point. We were their forefathers.
Basically. Yeah. Right.
They don't know that.
They don't know it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it strikes me because like that takes, I mean, youth group culture in Christian churches in America is this, its own little microcosm, but then you take it to a different level, right? I mean,
very niche, very, very niche. Yes. Right. Very niche.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So then that leads me to wanting to pick your brain then about creativity in the Christian life.
Yeah.
Cause that's, I mean, that's what you do. Like even being a theater, you know, major in college and all that stuff. How do you think about some of that stuff, like creativity?
Well, I had, again, like I grew up with really with people who were very encouraging towards my gifts. And even a church family, which I grew up Southern Baptist in like a typical SBC church in the middle of the worship movement. You know, like we had two services, traditional and contemporary, like everybody did.
Right.
And it was, you know, the older people in our church were so offended by the drum set that we had to take it down between, you know, just all of these things. But I really grew up in a time when that type of creativity was not shunned. And truth be told, the church has always been creative. It's just not been in those arenas. And so, you know, I think even now more so than then, it's just gone, just skyrocketed because of the internet and social media. But I had people who's, and I'm not a typical, I really don't connect with a sermon. I've never connected with a sermon. And again, I had a pastor that was when I was a kid, who took my brother and I as their practice grandchildren. And they loved us. And they may have done this for every kid in the church, but they made us feel like we were so, that our opinions were valid. Our questions were valid. They were so incredibly kind to us. And so it just fostered this relationship with church that I didn't really have a negative view of it. I felt cultivated. I felt wanted, that my gifts were wanted. Now I think that led to me being like a considered to be a loudmouth and, you know, pretty bossy. So be it.
Yeah, right? What are you going to do?
It's good for them. But it was just a really positive. And I know that experience is rare and and it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it has always been such I've always felt really, really grateful for the way that my gifts were used. I was, you know, we did musicals at my church. We did, you know, I was in the choir. I got to sing specials, like, but it made me feel like I was a part. And so I think finding those kids or those people who have different gifts and utilizing them to make them feel, to make them a part of the community where you may not have had that before, I think is really crucial. But yeah, that was my experience. And I know that's not everyone's experience.
No, that's cool. I mean, I love that. Although you're robbed of, robbed of your opportunity to be jaded, you know, as a child.
I know. God, it's really, really difficult for me.
Yeah, that is tough. That is tough.
It is.
I'm sorry for you.
Really love holding on to that. It's great, right? But whatever.
Yes. Yes. That is sad. Oh geez. Oh, I wanted to ask Enneagram.
Oh, I'm a 3.
I'm a 3 too.
Dang it, Curry.
What the heck? Okay. Well, so there's a pretty strong 4 wing, I assume then?
You know, I think I want to be a 4 wing, but I don't think I am because I don't like feelings. They make me real nervous.
Sure.
And I really do, I don't know. I like to say that maybe I'm like a majestic eagle because my wings are equal. I put that into the universe.
That felt like a 4 comment right there.
I think it's okay. Well, I'll take that too. I'll take that too.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so like for you, let me ask this as a 3 wing or as a 3, do you find that your work in ministry, do you ever feel yourself second guessing it because of your performative nature?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
All the time.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better about my life.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, how do you ever know for sure that you're being authentic in whatever you're doing as a 3, right?
Yes, like, I think that's true.
Because there's always this like mask that is your default.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so you're always putting on your best face for everyone, no matter what.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, I preach, you know, I've been preaching for 10 years pretty regularly at church and stuff. And it's hard because I really feel gifted at preaching, but it can be so easy to be so disingenuous.
Oh my gosh. With it, right? That's the title of my memoir, I think. Look how easy it is for me to be disingenuous.
That's interesting. How do you see that stuff playing out in your like sort of everyday life then?
Well, I feel, you know, when you work for a ministry, you work for something ministry adjacent. I think the tendency for me is to always question my motives and just to be constantly like, I think I don't know if I'm doing this for the right reason. I think I am. Help me, Jesus, to do that. Right. And I like, that's really all I feel like I can do now is just to say like, okay, check your motives with your people. Why are you doing this? Why, you know, and I mean, I don't pass the test every time for sure.
Yeah. Well, then can I ask you a maybe more deep question then?
I don't know. We'll see.
You don't have to answer it. But so does that make you fear any sort of like success?
I don't think it makes me fear success. I think it makes me suspicious of it.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And not even suspicious of, it's suspicious of myself to say,
yeah, right.
Is why, if this is happening, what is the reason? Is it because, right. you know, God is in it and he, or is it because I'm a master manipulator and I did it? Yeah. And what will the judgment be for that?
I mean, if you take the judgment seat seriously, you know, I think you have to process that to some extent, especially as a 3, right? Yeah. I struggle with that. I think so too. I really do. I don't know. I worry, you know what I mean? Or that like the success will go to my head.
Oh, 100%.
Like, right. Yeah. Well, so how do you deal with that?
I think it's surrounding yourself with people who don't believe your press, who know who you really are. And, you know, my small group helps with that. It's just like the, you know, and I like, please hear me say, like, I don't think I'm some like mogul or like
a massive
success.
Pretty big deal.
Guys,
pretty
I used deal. To do Christian theater. I don't know. I was probably at your D now. But I think even, you know, 3s, we really, success, it's not necessarily being Steve Jobs or, you know, Jeff Bezos. It's being successful in our own spheres and doing a good job and achieving that. And so I think we as 3s can make success anything we want it to be.
Right.
In order to tell ourselves, I'm super successful. So even if that's in a small way, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, we certainly don't suffer from, you know, lack of confidence.
Yes, very much so. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think owning that though, right?
Yeah. I think owning that and being upfront about it. And
right.
if everyone knows that you're a manipulator and if everyone knows that you're addicted to feedback and success, then they know how to help you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So can I ask, what's your husband's Enneagram type?
He's a 9.
A 9. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, okay. He's a 9. Hmm. We actually go, I go to 9 in stress.
Stress. Yeah. So if y'all are stressed out together, it could be bad, right?
It's not a good, nothing gets done.
Right. The kids are like naked running around the house and you're watching TV.
No, that is super accurate. Yeah. If you saw our house right now, you'd be like, oh no, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
You must be in stress here. Yeah. I feel like I'm always in stress. So. No, that's interesting. My wife's a 2 and she helps me with the whole feelings thing a lot, you know?
Oh, that's good.
Right. Owning all that stuff. And, you know, she doesn't let me get by with shit, you know? Anyway. Okay. So let's move into your current role. What exactly do you do?
Yeah. It's such a great question. That's a big question. Well, I have like a couple of jobs. So I'm still a freelance Bible studies. Right. I know. So I'm well, I love work. I want to just work all the time. Right. And I am trying to be more aware of busy versus work and like stopping the glorification of busy. There's probably nothing that makes me crazier than even hearing myself or someone else just be like, oh, I'm so busy. It's like, why are you frittering your life away? Stop doing that. And I'm doing it to myself too. So I'm really trying to stop that.
That's good.
But So like in my, I'm still a freelance Bible studies editor and writer. And I love that work. It's quiet work. It's not, it's introspective work, and it's work where I'm learning while I'm doing it, which I really love. And then at the podcast and the Bible Binge, I'm doing a lot of creative content work. So I'm their COO. So I manage all the operations, which is just, so I'm looking for live show venues. I'm, you know, managing our office contract. We have a virtual assistant, so I'm managing her and kind of doing some of those nuts and bolts things. We are season 5 of the Bible Binge just launched, or it will launch, I think, when this goes out. And so making the trailer and finding clips to share, and I'm editing some of that now. So that's really fun. And then producing live events, that is a whole other thing. We're going on a little tour this year. And so, you know, I'm working with the venues, I'm coordinating volunteers, I'm creating video content and, you know, live screen content for that. And so that's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of work. But I really love it. And then like personally,
so before you move on, I was at the Chicago show.
No way.
Yeah. My wife and I were at the Chicago. Yeah. The content was incredible. Content was literally incredible.
Good. Okay.
I loved the show so much. Good. I did. I'm so glad. And
listen, Knox and Jamie, they are, I think there's a misconception about, and you probably understand. I know you understand this. There's a misconception for people who work in this type of field, like podcasting and these sort of new jobs that nobody ever knew 5 years ago would actually be a thing. That it's just a easy job or it's a fun job. And I've never seen two people work harder in my life. I think it shows in their content. I think it shows in the creativity of what they do. They're really, really so good at this job, but it is hard work. And so, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the effort that they put into it. And I think it shows with their content for sure.
Yeah.
And then, when we were there, I had that burger from Au Cheval.
Oh, and did it change your life?
Listen, I'm about to start crying right now thinking about it, because I can't believe it. I can't believe it's in our world. I can't believe we live in a world with this thing that is so incredible. And they had that bacon appetizer. Did you have the bacon appetizer?
Yes.
Oh, wow. It was crazy. And we saw Hamilton in Chicago and I died. I just died. My chill went on to be with the Lord. Like I could not, it was such a wonderful experience, Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and we're from burger country. There's literally more cattle than people.
Listen,
where we're from.
Oprah had to come live in Amarillo because a cattle agency sued her. So she had to come and shoot the Oprah Winfrey Show in Amarillo, Texas for like a month.
That is such a funny, that like shaped so much of my childhood.
Oh my gosh. You could run into her anywhere.
Right.
She was just there.
She was in Amarillo, Texas.
She shot at the little theater. So crazy.
That is so weird.
So nuts. Anyway, yeah.
Nobody, yeah.
I love Chicago.
Okay. Yes.
all
that to say, it's a great city.
It is really great.
It is like 40 below zero right now, though.
Yeah,
so
I'm not okay with that. Need for Chicago to get it together.
God's punishing me for something.
Yes, it's you or someone else, or maybe a lot of you. I don't know.
A lot of us. Okay, so besides live shows, so you do the freelance editing, you do the live shows. Okay, let's proceed. What else do you do?
Okay. So, this year I actually wrote. Because I grew up Southern Baptist, but 10 years ago I became Anglican and really freaked my family out with infant baptism and real wine at communion. And I love it. I think it's, I describe it as a chiropractic adjustment for my faith. And a lot of that was due to the work that I was doing in Christian events, which I don't have anything really bad to say about those events. I think that like anything else, they can be genuine or they can be false. And I had a lot of and I think even if they are false, God can still work through that. I had a lot of really deep and meaningful like Ebenezers from working, you know, from worshiping at a rock show or, you know, whatever, with the lights and the sound. Like I had a lot of genuine experiences. And so I don't have anything bad to say about that. But I did notice as I worked in this arena and I attended a church that also was big into production, that it was so distracting for me. It was, you know, I would, they missed that light cue. And it just became, I couldn't separate the two. And so I was speaking with a friend and he said, you know, I actually attend this small Anglican church that meets in a chapel on the seminary campus. You should go check it out. And so my husband and I, we went and it just immediately clicked for me. And then, you know, through speaking with our priest and his wife, who's a deacon, and it just immediately became very clear to me that this is how I was made to worship. And I think there are thousands of, you know, I mentioned earlier that I just never really connected with longer, you know, my gosh, if you've been in like the Christian youth event world, you know, these guys, they preach for 45 minutes and that's insane for the attention span of anyone, much less a 13-year-old boy.
Right.
So, you know, it was shorter sermons. It was interactive. I'm standing, I'm sitting, I'm, you know, saying words out loud. And it just became, it just opened up an entirely new way to view my faith. And so actually this year I wrote a Lent guide for Lent and Holy Week. And so it's a guide that kind of goes through, like, if you don't know about Lent, or if you're sure, because we never celebrated or observed, it's hard to say you celebrate Lent, observed Lent, you know, growing up. And it was just something that our Catholic friends did. And, you know, they would come to school with ashes on their forehead. And just didn't, I just didn't know why. I didn't understand why. And just never really had the gumption, I guess, to ask. And so the guide kind of walks you through, like, what is Lent? Why is it important? A little bit about the church calendar, which I just love and find a lot of resonance with. And then it's a daily devotional as well. And so it just kind of takes you through, what I like about Lent is that it takes you through the hard parts of being a human, and it allows you to sit in that and ask those questions and have those doubts and wrestle with anger and grief and pain, but you're not sitting alone. You are Jacob. You are wrestling with the angel of the Lord and he's with you. And I really like that it takes you through that and then it helps guide you out. And so it just gives me a place to hold on to those hard things about being human and then leave them there. I'm not a naturally introspective person. I'm not a naturally mindful person. And so going through the church calendar has really helped me pay more attention and participate in my own faith, if that makes sense. So anyway, I wrote that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So I have there's a large Anglican church I do a lot of work with up here, but I ended up at a charismatic church that is highly influenced by the ancient future stuff with Bob Weber.
It's
So we celebrate the sacraments, not infant baptism, but, you know, we celebrate the sacraments and we follow the church calendar.
Yeah.
And it's been equally transformative for me, I would say. I want to know all about the Lent guide though. Like, what are we getting into with all of this stuff?
Well, I think it's just a lot of, so what I'm talking about is what the church calendar has done for me. It's talking about the history of Lent, like how we got here, what different denominations are doing, because it is different between, you know, Catholics versus Anglicans, that type of a thing. It's not for one denomination, but it is, if you're interested in that, if you have always wondered that question, if you've always been because I think with the church calendar, I feel
like I can't move forward sometimes because mm-hmm. there's no natural progression of things. I'm just in my life. I'm living my life. And with the church calendar, I think it sets up these little stones, these little monument stones to say, okay, yeah. here, this is the part where we're going to be mad and you don't have to come to worship and you don't have to pretend. Yeah. You don't have to manufacture some kind of feeling of happiness. And, you know, I remember specifically at a youth event once, a speaker getting angry with my youth group because we weren't happy enough. Wow. And listen, I could go off about this because I think happiness is the scourge of American Christianity. We need another podcast
because I want to hear all about that.
Well, and I think that it was so transformative for me just for a church to tell me, hey, in this 46-day period, you don't have to be happy at all. You don't have to manufacture some feeling about the resurrection or about what Jesus did for you. Like, that's not where we hold this space. Right. And I love that. And so what I wanted to do with the guide is I wanted to, I think a lot of people, especially within the past couple of years, have been super, super hurt by the church. Yeah. Whether that is globally, whether that is specifically. And I think a lot of people who have questions and who have pain and who have grief about that, they feel blocked out. Because we want to make our churches marketable. We want to make them available to people. And so we only hype up the good stuff. And what I love about the church calendar is that it says, no, 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 no. It's okay to feel this way. You're not alone in your feeling of this way. You are called beloved, and you can sit with these questions, and it's not bad. It's not negative. In fact, it's encouraged. And I really, really love it. So I wanted to show that. I wanted for people who didn't grow up in that tradition, and I obviously didn't grow up in that tradition, and I'm still learning so much. Yeah. And so it's just, why is it important? What's the purpose of it? How do we go through it? Very practical stuff. And then the daily devotionals, which are kind of focusing on the hard parts of the hard parts of scripture, the things that we look at Jesus saying, and we're like, oh, I don't love that. That makes me feel weird inside. I don't like that. Yeah, right. And so, you know, the anger, the grief, just it kind of focuses on those, and it can, and so I tried to make it, because this is just, it's hard. Lent is very unsexy. And so, you know, and it can be dark and it can be depressing, but I think that the point of Lent is that we walk through this with Jesus and we're not alone in it. So that was sort of the point of the Lent guide.
Yes. That's awesome. I love that. That's so good.
Oh, good. So good. I'm so glad.
Well, because it is so frustrating. I have so many things I want to say. First of all, God set it up like this from the very beginning, right? The Israelites had feasts and they had fasts. And I mean, there was a progression to the year from the beginning, from the Mosaic law, right? And then we take it as the modern evangelical church and we turn it into every day's, you know, Resurrection Sunday, and every day is exciting and as fun as possible and consumer driven, like you say, and there's no space to sit with the crap.
Yes. Or we relegate that to you know, a different building, right. You know, like, AA is in the basement. Right. We don't bring that up here. Right. So, and I think that that is the reason God did that, is he said, you guys need a natural progression to move through these feelings, and you're not going to get stuck if you do that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's, look, and depression is real. Like, if you're experiencing depression, like, that is the real thing, and you can get stuck. But if you're moving through your life in a way that is attached to the church calendar, it's just giving you handles to keep moving.
Yeah.
Right. And to be introspective about certain parts of your life. It just makes a lot of sense to me. It appeals to my very rational side, which I love.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's nothing, one of the more powerful things with me in the church calendar is that Saturday between Good Friday and Resurrection Sunday. And just this, like leaning into, like, this is when Jesus, like, was in the grave, you know? It's, there's something so profound about that. Like, yes, there's a sadness and a
dead.
Yes, right. For us.
Yeah. Yeah. And right. So, you know, that Tenebrae service on Good Friday, when, you know, the lights go out and there's only one candle that leaves the sanctuary. Right. And it's like, this is dark, guys. Like, this
we're not leaving you happy with this service, right?
No. And yeah. I think there's such value in that, because how painful is it for someone who is in a dark place to look around and see that the only story that is valued is one that is happy,
yep,
and one that is joyful. And that's just not true. So much of scripture is so sad, man, and so tired and frustrated and painful. And I think it's so, and listen, I don't like pain. I don't, like,
yeah, emotion's not your thing anyway, right?
Emotion is not my thing. And right. So this is, it's not easy at all. And I, you know, and walking through that is so hard, but I think it's so good for us to make ourselves uncomfortable and to pay attention to the things that we fear or we don't like.
Amen.
Yeah.
I love that. So everybody should buy the devotional.
That's very kind. And yeah, listen, if they want to, can I give them a code? Is that okay?
Oh my, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah. They can use Hustle15 for 15% off.
For real?
Yes, of course.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Well, okay.
There you go.
There you go.
I love it.
There you are.
I love it. You're awesome. I appreciate that. I think the work you're doing is important work. So all the way around.
That's very kind. Yeah. That's very kind. Thank you.
We're kind of there at the time. We didn't even talk about your Bible Binge Bible Scholar gig.
It's so fun. Listen, the Bible Binge is so, and I won't belabor this. I promise. But we have gotten such an interesting response.
To yeah, Bible I bet. I bet.
Like, we get seminary students who are like, hey, I hate the Bible right now. Like, it is, I view it as a
test. Yes. Right.
It is a drag to me. And mm-hmm. this has made me fall further in love with scripture. And I'm like, well, that's incredible. Then when we get emails from people who say, hey, I'm a lapsed half atheist, half Catholic that never cracked the Bible open in my entire life. And I don't, like, I'm not a believer. I'm not spiritual in any way, but I love this podcast.
Yeah.
And so it just, we run the gamut, and it is so fun. It was such a great idea from Knox and Jamie to do this, because I think there's no space right now that's really giving the Bible, like, talking about the Bible in a casual way, not out of disrespect, but as, like, a way to connect with people over story.
Yeah.
And so that has just been really fun. And it's fun to be a part of that and go through those stories. And, you know, I'm reading those stories in from a really different perspective than I have for my entire life. And so I'm finding out so many things. You know, we recently did a whole season on David, the life of David.
I enjoyed.
Oh, I'm so glad. And we had, you know, I had heard this story about Bathsheba for so long about, you know, oh, who she was. And, you know, why was this, you know, why are you taking a bath on the top of your roof? What's wrong with you, Bathsheba? Well, and, like, just finding out the intricacies of that story were not what I had been told. Mm-hmm. And culturally, the way, you know, that Jewish life at that time kind of existed, and, you know, it has been so eye-opening for me. I am learning so much as we go through these stories. Yeah, so it's right. a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I'm not bragging right now, but I'm just saying I have master's degrees in exegesis and historical and systematic theology.
Oh, see, you're my biggest nightmare.
I'm a nerd. I'm a big nerd. But I wanted to tell you that because I have greatly appreciated all of your work on that. I love the rebukes. I think you're doing a really, really good job. So
that's very kind. The theater major in me dies when I hear people like you listen to this. And I'm like, now they know that I'm just I'm just learning right along with them.
But that's how it should be. And I think that's awesome.
If anything, it's a testament to the fact that this is not inaccessible.
Exactly.
And
you don't
shouldn't
have master's degrees to
no, and it shouldn't be. Right. And that it's the Bible is for everyone. And it's not just for the scholars. It's not just for, you know, people with fancy degrees. Although those people are that is always good.
There's a place for what I can bring to the table, but
absolutely.
But we're all learning together at the same time, right? Because even that Bathsheba that you mentioned spoke to me, and I didn't know a lot of what you were bringing up. And First Samuel is literally, well, the books of Samuel are literally my favorite Old Testament books.
They're so great.
Yes. And that passage you brought out in a certain way that I never had. And I just have to say, you responded to a guy on Facebook who was critical, and it got shared, and like, it was beautiful. There was a discourse that actually like meant something on social media.
It was so, and listen, Robert and I are social media friends now.
Really? Like, that's awesome. That's so cool. I love that.
And I thought it was because I think we live in a time right now where it's impossible to have a conversation. Yeah. It's impossible to disagree and have a conversation with someone. And so what I loved about that exchange was here are two people who don't agree on something,
right,
and they're going to talk about it. And, you know, and it helped that I won.
That does help. Like, that does help. Yeah. He can see it, but
yeah. But I really loved that moment of us saying, you know what? I think we disagree with each other, but that doesn't mean we have to be hateful or ugly or rude or dismissive of what the other one thinks. And I really loved that. It was really a fun experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I love that. So if you ever want to nerd out about the Bible or anything, just hit me up. I'll be
okay.
I'm around. I love that sort of stuff.
Yes, it's really fun. And it's fun to see all of the things that we missed growing up. And not because anyone didn't teach us correctly, just because it's hard to talk about Bathsheba to a room of sixth graders. And, you know, you just miss a lot. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay. So many other things I want to talk about, but I think for both of our sakes, we should move into our final two questions here, if that's all right with you.
Great. Yes, that's
okay.
Great.
So my first question is, what, and this is a good question for you especially, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Oh, probably the strangest job I've ever had was my first job, which was I helped my grandfather on our family ranch. I helped him build an apple orchard and to raise money to go to Washington, D.C. with my seventh grade like class.
Wow.
And it was weird because it's out in the middle of nowhere. And literally my grandfather has since passed away, and I'm pretty convinced that he made up this job just so he could spend time with me. Which is very tender to me.
Yeah.
And because every single tree that we planted has died.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to ask. Oh, okay.
We're in the Texas Panhandle. There are no trees.
Because
trees do not
trees don't grow there. Yeah.
Fruit trees definitely don't.
Right.
Live.
Okay.
So there is actually one tree that made it that is still alive. But it was, my grandmother would cook for us at night, and it was a really sweet time. But definitely strange. So,
So just a quick, have you ever had calf fries then?
Of course. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. People freak out about that sort of stuff.
Well, yes, it is. It's very odd. Let's not pretend it's not.
Everybody does that, right? That's totally fine.
It's totally normal.
Yeah.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever done the Big Texan challenge?
No, I've never done the Big Texan challenge.
You've never done it. I haven't either. I want to.
I want to, and at the same time, just really don't. I feel like it might ruin me on steak for a while.
That's a valid point, and I really care deeply about my steaks.
Yeah, so. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe someday.
Maybe one day.
Okay. So my final question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
Okay. Well, I think that it's been said 100 times before that anything we do can, you know, it's in 1 Corinthians, whatever you do, do it for the glory of God. And so I think it's finding those moments that, and I think the liturgy of church has helped me with this. In I actually have a book called Every Moment Holy, Every Moment Holy. And it's from Douglas McKelvey. And it's a book of prayers for the prayers that we don't have. And, you know, in the Book of Common Prayer, it's, you know, prayers for a wedding or prayers for a death. And this is like prayers for when you'd have to change diapers, prayers for awkward social interactions, you know, and I love that because it has kind of clicked something in me to say, it doesn't have to be a big momentous occasion. It doesn't have to be in a church. It doesn't have to be in a ministry, but genuinely, where are the moments in life, in our work, in the things that we do on a daily basis, where can we find God? Like, what is he up to in those spaces? Because we look in scripture and he's always up to something in those spaces. Rarely do we ever, and you may know the answer to this better than me, but I can't remember any real, hardly any instances of God just working in the temple, like, or just, you know, maybe with Anna or something like that. But yeah, most of the time he's out. Yeah. He's out in the wilderness or he's out in other places. And so I want to take that and I want to imbue that into my daily life to say, okay, well, when I'm yelling at my child because she's left her shoes in the middle of the floor, what are ways that I can take those moments and find God in them? Right. And you know, so that is what I would recommend.
That's awesome. I think that's great advice. And I think it's one of those things that's like super hard to do, right? Like
it is because it asks you to be mindful. Yeah. And it asks you to pay attention and to participate. And that's, I don't usually do like a word for the year because I want to say that's dumb, but I don't think it is. I think it's actually really a good idea. I know there's like pushback on it now. It's not the cool thing to do, but I like having a word, and my word this year is participate because it is so hard for me. I can put my head down, and you probably know this, you probably do this too, as a three, put my head down, work, find my value in working, find my value in staying busy and achieving. And I can look up and days have passed since I've had a meaningful interaction with anybody. Yeah. And so I want to be participatory with the people in my life, with the gospel, with what God is doing around me, because that's what he's asking us to do all through scripture. Participate. You get to do this with me. We're doing this together. I could do it on my own, no question. Right. But I want you to be there with me. And I think that is the call in our lives, in work and just in our everyday.
Yeah. That's good. I love it. Well, hey, Aaron, it was so nice to meet you and get to chat with you. And yeah, what a small world.
I know. This was so fun. I love the panhandle.
Right. Gotta love it. All right. Well, thanks. And maybe we'll see you in Amarillo or Canyon at some point. Well, you know,
you won't come, but I understand. I'll come to Amarillo.
You can come over to Amarillo. I'm there. So.
Okay, great.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Aaron. I just think this interview is really important. If you have never like looked into the seasons of the church and the church calendar, it's cool stuff. I might leave some resources out there for you. Maybe I'll send it in my next email, some resources for the church calendar. So you can make sure you're signed up with my for my emails at currieblandford.com. You can sign up for my emails there. I go out monthly, and then, you know, it's just kind of keeping you up to date on the podcast. And then there's a nerd corner. So maybe church calendar will be this nerd corner. There's some great resources out there. It really does. And I like how she put it, keep handles sort of keeps you moving along in the year. And I think that's an important part of Christianity, that there are these seasons and, you know, Lent and Pentecost and Advent and all these seasons have their ways in which we can reflect and grow deeper in our relationship with Jesus. So get out there, go ahead and follow the link. I have it in the show notes to purchase the Lent devotional, and make sure you use that promo code HUSTLE 15. That's all in caps. Get out there, enjoy it. And until next time, get out there and hustle.